Chapter 1. Jake, 8 months before his birth. It all started with a fateful decision and the most wonderful news of my life, not necessarily in that order. On a gray day in late February, the kind of day that makes everyone wish Christmas lights still hung from their neighbor's tree branches, my wife called me at my office. "I took it," she said. I knew that by it she meant a pregnancy test. In the movies, the wife always calls, saying, "I have to tell you something. Brace yourself." In reality, my wife and I had been married for 5 years and engaged for 3 before that. I'm not saying that I was so in tune with her womanly cycle that I knew she was late before she did. What I am saying is that there is much less surprise when it comes to married couples' privates than the movies like to admit. "And?" I said. "Don't sound so excited," she laughed. I cleared my throat and tried again in my effortless deadpan. "I feel like my heart is going to jump out of my chest." "Cliché," she laughed even harder. Only one person, my wife, knew I wanted to be a writer. An English minor in college, she felt compelled to critique me on occasion, but she was always unflaggingly supportive of this hidden dream of mine. She'd buy me how-to writing books and fancy fountain-type pens for Valentine's Day. "Caught again." "Look, not by phone. Let's go get some lunch." "Sure." I really just wanted to know if I was going to be a dad, but the suggestion of lunch pretty much clued me in on what I expected to be good news. "Where?" "Fancy. How about Blue Coast? Noon?"
"I'll meet you at the restaurant."
"Love you." "I love you too, Simon. And I'm pregnant." She hung up. I wanted to call her right back, to laugh and talk too loudly about the news, but I knew that wasn't how this had to work. My wife had an agenda. Not in a bad way, just a very deliberate way. This monumental news must be celebrated with a lavish meal and discussed in hushed tones while surrounded by opulence. This was not meant in a showy manner, more like an artist applying color to a canvas. She was painting our memory, and I was all for it. Blue Coast was about as hip a restaurant as Wilmington, Delaware could support, although it would be lost in the mid-range mediocrity of a city like New York or Chicago. It tried its hardest and rose above the mom-and-pop Italian places and the vanilla chain restaurants that most of Delaware favored. Instead, Blue Coast had that not-quite-Wilmington look with its minimalist architecture and deep, rich, but subtle colors. Soft but modern alternative music piped through the hidden speakers, and men and women in business suits sat at two tops, some leaning forward and whispering intimately about love or money, others leaning back and scoping out the room to see who was who and who wasn't. I met my wife there. She was already sitting at a table, her long runner's legs crossed and her dexterous fingers tapping along on her BlackBerry. I stopped at the host stand and just watched her for a second. Dressed in a form-fitting suit jacket she'd bought in New York City and had tailored by a woman who lived in a trailer with her 3 young kids, she fit right in at the restaurant. The crease above her right eyebrow hinted at some struggle at work. She was a lawyer for one of the 3 nationally prominent law offices in the city. Due to the corporate tax laws of Delaware, its chancery court was one of the most powerful in the U.S. judiciary system. Therefore, the big boys set up shop here. She did not practice corporate law. Instead, she was a civil defense expert and the office's youngest local partner. We met when she was still in law school. At that time, she was interning for the state's prominent U.S. senator, and I was working for the county executive. I was his go-to guy, at least in my head, and was very busy that day. The Democratic presidential candidate was coming in to stump for votes. Not for himself, but for the candidate for Delaware's other U.S. Senate seat. The race was closer than anyone expected, considering the Republican incumbent was well-liked and hadn't been caught with his pants down, either literally nor figuratively. I was helping find volunteers to work the event, and her name came up.
I'd never met her, but one of the other guys there said she was the best. At what? I didn't ask. Had I known what she looked like, I might have, because when she showed up that day, all bets were off. She walked into the office in these form-fitting black pants and a t-shirt that kept offering the most suggestive peaks at her perfect abdomen. Her blonde hair, shoulder length and sleekly straight, was pushed behind one tiny cute ear. If I had called it cute that day, she would have written me off as a frat boy idiot. What caught my eye, though, was a perfectly shiny silver ball pierced through the cartilage halfway up the side of her ear. "Who's that?" I had asked a buddy of mine. "She's that intern from the senator's office. Goes to Villanova." "Wow." She claims that she heard me say that. I think that little tidbit became legend as she told and retold our love story over the years.